So there I was, hiding under the pickup. Slim bent down and twisted his head so that our eyes met. I whapped my tail on the ground as if to say, I'm innocent, honest. All I did was... He grinned.
Old Sally Mae packs a pretty mean right hand, don't she? Don't know as I ever saw her punch out a dog before. You've sure got a way with the ladies, Pooch. Reminds me of me.
He hung the gas nozzle back on its baling wire hook on the southwest angle iron leg of the gas tanks. Then he climbed into the pickup and called out,
Come on, stink bomb. You ride in the back.
Riding in the back was fine with me, and it had nothing to do with me being a so-called stink bomb. Any ranch dog worth talking about will ride in the back of the pickup where the wind can blow his ears around and he can see what's going on in the world. And just for the record, let me state that I didn't care for the way he smelled either. At least I took a bath every day. He turned right at the mailbox and drove to Slim's place, down the creek a mile or so from headquarters. He lived in that shack beneath the cottonwoods, the one that was covered with tar paper because he and Loper never got around to putting on the siding. They hate any kind of work that involves a hammer. Let me rephrase that. They hate any kind of work that involves work. And I'm not just saying that because Slim had called me a so-called stink bomb. Although, that did strike a sensitive nerve. We pulled up to the front door, which faced the creek on the east, and he went inside. As he closed the screen door behind him, he turned back to me and said,
You stay out here, Rosebud.
Okay, that did it. I'd had it up to here with his name calling and his cutting, cruel, childish remarks. By George, if he didn't like the way I smelled, he could just try to catch the rustlers without me. You know what I did? I quit. Yes, sir. Right then and there. I walked off the job. I set my course in a southwesterly direction and said goodbye to a crummy job on a crummy third-rate ranch and...
Come here, Hank.
Scraps. And what the heck, he wasn't such a bad guy after all, and the least I could do was give him another chance. I went back to the porch and patched up our friendship over a plate of last night's cold, greasy potatoes. Don't get me wrong. I'm no pushover. I won't always settle for cold, greasy potatoes. But he'd caught me at the right moment, and somebody had to walk that extra mile to keep the friendship alive. Fortunately, I didn't have to walk a whole mile. So we made our peace, Slim and I. While I woofed down the cold taters and licked the plate, that was a special favor to him since I knew how much he hated washing dishes. While I cleaned up the dishes, he started putting together his camping gear. There was quite a lot of it. A tent, his cowboy bedroll, a gas lantern, fishing gear, pots and pans, cans of food, a yeller slicker, an axe, and a box full of Twinkies. When he had it all loaded in the back of the pickup, he drove down to the corral, poured some sweet feed into several feed bunks, and whistled to his horses. They came at a trot, but before they could eat, they had to go through their usual mealtime ritual of biting, squealing, and kicking each other. Horses are such gluttons. Have we discussed horses? I don't like them. Not only do they fight over every flake of corn, but they will go out of their way to attack and harass an innocent dog. I glared at them through the boards of the corral fence. If one of them had dared to come within range, I would have nipped him on the fetlocks. It's a procedure I've developed over the years, shooting my neck through the space between the two bottom boards and giving them a good stern bite before they know what's happening. And it does get their attention. Yes, every now and then a guy gets kicked, but with these horses, you've got to take what you can get. While the horses were eating and biting each other, Slim carried a pack saddle out of the shed and brushed the dust off of it. He haltered Jughead, the green colt, and tied the lead rope to a stout post. Then he started rigging him up with the pack saddle. When he'd tightened the cinch, he stepped back and said,
"Well, that wasn't so bad. I thought we might see a little rodeo."
Then he started piling on the camping gear. When he'd gotten the load balanced, he covered it with a tarp and lashed it down, stepped back to admire his work, and said,
"Now, ain't that a pretty load, Hank?"
I barked. It looked pretty good to me. Then he threw a saddle on old Dunny, his favorite using horse, and we were ready to set out on a new adventure. Slim opened the corral gate and stepped up into the saddle. Holding Jughead's lead rope in his right hand, he nudged Dunny with the spurs and started towards the open gate. Jughead didn't move. Slim tried several times to coax him into a walk, but the colt had decided that he didn't want to go camping, thank you. Slim pulled his hat down tight and said,
"Okay, it looks to me like we'll have to go to Plan B. Stand by for action, Hank. This may get a little western."
I stood by for action. He circled Dunny around and got some slack into the lead rope. Then he dallied the rope around the saddle horn, took a deep breath, jobbed old Dunny with the spurs, and yelled,
"Bite him, Hank!"
At that point, things began to happen real fast. Jughead had pretty much made up his mind that he wasn't going to move, but when the slack went out of the lead rope, he got several surprises. The first was that Dunny weighed 1,150 pounds, and when he got all those pounds moving in one direction, whatever was tied on to him was likely to move with him. That colt braced his legs, went back on the rope, fought like a tiger, and got jerked halfway across the corral. The second surprise came when I shot under the bottom board of the fence and went on the attack. After I'd tattooed his hind legs several times with my teeth, he decided that leaving the barn might be a pretty good idea. I love biting horses. I'd rather bite a horse than eat a bone, to tell you the truth. Yes, sir, we had our little parade moving in the right direction. Only trouble was that once we got Jughead moved off of high center, he went to pitching and tried to shuck that pack saddle off his back. And once Jughead started bucking, Dunny must have thought that sounded like fun, because he started bucking too. And all at once, old Slim had his hands full of broncs. I think one bronc would have been plenty. If he'd dropped Jughead's rope and concentrated on lining out Dunny, he'd have been prouder of his ride. But Slim was stubborn and hated to give slack to that smart aleck colt. And he kept his dallies tight and tried to ride out of the storm. He did all right through the first five jumps. But halfway around the horse pasture fence, he ran out of saddle glue. I knew what was coming when I saw him lose his left stirrup. The right stirrup was the next to go, followed a moment later by Slim himself. When Dunny planted his front feet in the ground and dropped his head, Slim flew south, Dunny went west, and Jughead bucked off to the east. The dust was so thick that I had to move around to get a better view. Through the cloud of dust, I saw old Slim dog paddling over the top of Dunny's ears. After a short flight, he landed face first in the middle of a clump of sagebrush. At that point, I did what any loyal cowdog would do, rushed to the scene of the crash and administered an emergency Red Cross lick on the face. It must have worked. Slim sat up, grabbed a handful of dirt, and threw it in Jughead's direction. My goodness, he looked a little mussed. One side of his face was covered with dust, while the other had taken on the color of fresh sagebrush. His glasses had come to rest on his upper lip, and there was a new crease in his hat. He sat there for a moment, staring at the toes of his boots, while I stared at his socks, which showed through the holes in the bottoms. He was wearing one white sock and one red one, which I thought was kind of interesting.
"You know, I didn't think that dun horse could buck me off."
He smiled, revealing a set of dirt-covered teeth.
but I'll bet he ain't horse enough to do it twice in one day.
He picked himself up off the ground and moaned.
Oh, say, that old dirt feels harder than it used to.
He limped over and caught Dunny's reins, tightened the cinch, and swung aboard.
You old fool, you want a buck? Try that one more time and we'll see who's the champion on this ranch.
He leaned back in the saddle, slapped Dunny across the ears with his hat, raked him with the spurs, and squalled,
Go to it, son.
Yahoo!
Dunny snorted and went to work. And I'm sorry to report that Slim didn't quite make it to the whistle. I arrived on the scene just as the dust cloud was drifting away. Slim appeared to be hugging a sagebrush, and he had lost his hat. I licked him on the ear. He raised his head and pushed me away.
Well, I told him to buck, and he sure did. This time, I think I'll encourage him not to buck and see what happens. I'd hate for him to make a habit of that.
He caught the horse and talked to him for a minute, swung up into the saddle, loped him around the pasture in a figure eight, and warmed him up, which he probably should have done to start with. Then he picked up the pack horse, and we headed off to the north. The rodeo was over, and now we were riding off to a new adventure. Catching rustlers in the canyon.